The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
The party isn't quite the same, all right? It may not be over with, but it's not quite the same. I realize that Jeremy Siegel's out there pounding away at 20,000, but you never know. Things are beginning to change, and one of the areas that has really changed is in energy. And we are fortunate today to have Tom Closa with us. Tom is Global Head of Energy Analysis for the Oil Price Information Services. He's considered, in fact, Peggy came in this morning with an article, and he's quoted at the top of the article about what's going to happen to gasoline, which I'm really interested in. So we're pleased this morning to have Mr. Closa with us. Tom, are you there?
I am here.
All right. Thank you, sir, for being with us. All right.
No problem.
What I've got a lot of questions to ask you, but basically, in general, what's going on with the oil and gas world? Why have we seen it come back again? You know, we saw the dip early this year, and then everybody was at least. Of course, you're talking. By the way, you're talking from Texas to Colorado, where oil is not only something you buy, but something that either you or your neighbor probably work in terms of an industry. So it's really important to us. Why has it dipped the second time?
Well, I think the second time it's dipped because all cylinders are working, essentially. You've got the non-OPEC, non-shale places like Russia, Brazil, and they're producing more. You've got the Saudis and OPEC producing more than they've produced in 3 years. And, you know, a lot of people wrote off the shale production. And the problem with shale production was that when it was $100 a barrel, they probably charged like $12 for hot dogs and for water services. You know, it was the kind of prices you would run into at a captive airport or Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some room there. So the good news is that they're lowering costs in the field. I think that West Texas is in decent shape. I think Canada's a little bit tougher. North Dakota's a little bit tougher. But basically, we don't have anyone cutting production. Demand is rising, but this whole Chinese yuan incident and the notion that they might not be the big engine driving global consumption growth has got the market in sort of dire straits.
Is there a way out of this? How do you think this is going to play out?
Well, I think it's going to play out that we're going to find a likely bottom. I would venture to say that we're probably overreacting a little bit now when we see crude oil prices in the low 40s. And I'm talking WTI. If you're talking Canadian heavy crude, it's actually only about $23 a barrel. So we're seeing some numbers we haven't seen in a generation. Now, the technicians are, you know, just as they're talking about that death cross in the stock market, they're talking about some really frightening prospects in oil, where we might test the low at the end of the financial unwinding in 2008, which was about 32.40, or even go back to the numbers we saw between Operation Desert Shield and sort of 2004, which is the teens and the 20s. I don't think we'll get there. I think we're pretty close to a bottom. I think we're probably in the seventh or eighth or ninth inning of finding that bottom. But I do think it's going to be low for a long time. Which is to say maybe between $40 and $65 a barrel for a long time.
Okay, because, yeah, they're starting to, you know, a lot of comments out there, but on CNBC there's some comments that at its current level of around $43 per barrel, it's only $31, looking at $2,000, it's only $31 in inflation. And he said if it gets down in the $30 range, we'll have prices that will be basically back where they were 15 years ago if you adjusted for inflation. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I hear you. And I think there's a big difference in the market between where we were 15 years ago. Around 2003, oil really started to become, and oil futures and options and so forth, a major, major asset class. A lot of money that used to be in real estate or stocks, equities, bonds, moved into oil futures. And a lot of it is very patient money, and a lot of it is foundational money, where it's there because they want to be long a commodity that they think ultimately is going to be, again, in tight supply. So I think that establishes a little bit of a bottom, and that's why I'm not in the camp that suggests that we could see any real serious time in the 20s or even the low 30s. And I would also say this, you know, we can look and we can say consumers are going to save about $50 billion on gasoline in the last 6 months of this year based on where prices are likely to go and where they've gone so far. I'm not so sure if, as we get these lower prices for crude, you know, you get the benefits to consumers, but it's probably a net negative, perhaps, for some aspects of economic growth that are non-consumptive when you get to values this low. There's just too many people that get hurt by it.
Right, and too many countries. Governments depend on the taxes and income from oil revenue. In fact, I read this morning that the only country that's still able to balance its budget is Norway.
There's the difference. The problem is, and if we use that as a metric, I mean, Venezuela, you would have thought that they would have fallen into just complete chaos based on what they need to balance their budget. But there's no choice but to keep pumping that oil. And there are some places that don't have the foreign reserves to last a long time. The problem for the oil producers in the United States who want to see higher numbers is that you've got some low-cost producers in the Middle East, the Saudis, Kuwaitis, the United Arab Emirates, who, when it comes down to it, their break-even price, you know, not related to social budgets, is probably just a few dollars a barrel.
Wow. Yeah, I know it's cheap. I didn't realize it was that cheap. Now, yeah. Jeff Gundlach says that if oil goes below $40 a barrel, he says that something, and I quote, is very, very wrong with the world. Do you think that this drop in oil is representative of a malaise that's really taken the world over?
I think there's a presumption that there could be a malaise. I think that this last dose that's bringing us to the threshold of six-year lows is really about China. And it's really about the notion that if you look at most of this century and most of the global growth and consumption has been in China, and of course India in the next few years. Let me give you a couple of numbers here. This is incredible. In 2008, if you look at vehicles in China and India, about 50 million vehicles in those two countries. The projections are of somewhere on the order of 250 million in 2020. So if they go according to plan, they're going to be large consumers of fossil fuels. If they don't go according to plan, and if we have a Chinese recession or whatever, I think there's obviously consequences across all sorts of asset classes.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid you're right. Certainly commodities seem to be dropping everywhere. Now, I did see this article today in which you, frankly, gave me some good news, I guess, out of all of this. Someone interviewed you about gas prices, and you said there will be thousands, even tens of thousands of stations below $2 by the time we're into football season. Are we really going to see a benefit like that?
Yeah, I would probably qualify that by saying by the time we're into football season and some teams are disappointed because they've been eliminated from the playoffs, but certainly in October and November, hopefully, I'm a New York Giants fan, hopefully when the Cowboys are in a malaise of their own, we will see low gasoline prices dotting the country. It's really easy to predict because right now the price of crude oil, you know, $42, $43. Gasoline should normally in the autumn sell for $5 or $10 above that, and it's selling for $20, $30, $40, or $50 above that. So refiners are having the biggest inning that I think I've ever witnessed in terms of profits on crude oil.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything wrong. It's just that we do have a driving season,
and they're making a lot of money. Tom, if you'll hang on, I'm going to ask you about what Congress is going to do next. Hang on just a moment. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to Straight Talk Money. Back in a minute.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got today Mr. Tom Kloza. Tom is Global Head of Energy Analysis for the Oil Price Information Service, which is really the world's most comprehensive sources for petroleum prices, news information. It's really to the industry. he doesn't have a newsletter or anything like that. You know, typically we have a lot of people on here that have newsletters or things like that. These people actually do work for the industry, which I think actually makes them a little more credible, frankly, because they don't have an agenda one way or another. And so we're really pleased to have Tom on with us today. He's giving us a lot of great information about what's going on out there. And if you've just joined us, you can look forward to some maybe lower gasoline prices by deep into the fall, maybe October, November. Maybe when you're time for driving season there for Thanksgiving, you might actually see something around $2 a gallon. Anyway, Tom, I wanted to ask you, we had a listener that has written us, and he's curious about this bill before Congress that will lift the export ban next month. He wants to know whether or not, what does that mean? I guess my first question is, do you think there's a chance of passage? Because with all the things that have gone on with the Keystone Pipeline, the administration has not been very friendly to the energy industry. So my first question is, do you think it's going to pass? And if so, what impact would it have if it does pass?
On the first answer, I'd say I don't think it's going to pass, but I would have been much more assured about it, at least not passing until after the 2016 elections, prior to the last few months. With the Iranian deal, there are some questions about, well, you know, you're creating a free market for them and not necessarily for U.S. producers. I still think, and refiners, by and large, most refiners are against lifting the export ban. And their point is that it's not a worldwide free market. You have a cartel, OPEC. You have regulations here in the United States where you have to move crude from port to port in Jones Act U.S. flagged vessels. And you also have some mandates for reformulated fuels. The other argument is that if some of the U.S. Production flows offshore, number one, the shale boom will boom a little bit more, and it'll lower the price, kind of lower the water table, so to speak, for oil internationally. I think both arguments have some merit. I think the problem is that if you look at 2016 elections and you look at some states that probably would have lost refineries if we didn't have this sort of domestic advantage, it's difficult to see a candidate winning without winning the states of, let's say, Pennsylvania, Ohio, New Jersey, all of which had refineries which probably wouldn't have made it. Texas and Louisiana, we know, will be very, very pro-exports. But I think it's something we'll see later in the decade. We'll see a couple of half measures where we'll swap some of our light shale oil crude, perhaps with Mexico, for some heavier stuff, kind of giving up carbohydrates to get protein, so to speak. But if I had to bet on it now, I'd say the ban doesn't get lifted until we address some of the other issues.
Okay. And what about this liquid natural gas situation? Everybody's all excited about it. Cheniere's plant is just about finished. There are a couple other companies that look to have gotten permits to build LNG. And I understand that liquid natural gas or natural gas itself is very expensive everywhere but the United States.
Yeah, if you look at the 21st century and particularly the last 10 years, the thing that really changed the playing field globally for energy was the shale gas boom in the United States and the notion that we've got natural gas prices, you know, $2.70 per million cubic feet, where, you know, you're in the teens in Asia and Europe, and really no sign of that changing. So I think it makes real economic sense. I think the problem that's going to happen is when they try to move LNG out of some other places, like up here in the Northeast, when eventually they try to do it, let's say, for some of the Marcellus gas that's coming out of the Appalachian, there'll be a considerable effort of, not in my backyard, I don't want a, you know, natural gas export facility where something could blow up and create all sorts of messes. So it is an incredible, incredible advantage that the United States has that can be shared and create some prosperity for the exporters, and I don't see it changing for quite a while.
And the Keystone Pipeline, what's going to be the resolution of that?
You know, I sit on a couple of boards, you know, just an advisory role with an awful lot of oil consultants and people who are very pro Keystone Pipeline. And it's kind of dropped from discussion because it's become something that's a battleground because of politics and not necessarily because of a great logistical need. Canadian crude can be bought for about, you know, $23 today. And you can get it to the U.S. Gulf Coast. You can get it there by pipeline, a few different pipelines, for about $9 a barrel or so. You can also rail it to different parts of the country and get it there in, you know, 3 or 4 days or something for maybe about $15 a barrel. So it's going to come, and we've seen a lot of different pipelines added. It probably makes sense to have that pipeline happen, but it's become such a point of political contention that you're not having a real sort of economic discussion on it. You've just had two sides that have dug in politically about it. But it absolutely is not, for the near term, crucial to what we pay for oil. Okay. It's become a sideshow.
And, Tom, aren't there – I mean, there are other so many other pipelines that are already in place that people are putting so much focus on the Keystone when all this other is still already going on, correct?
Yeah, well, everyone was arguing in Washington about Keystone. There's all sorts of pipelines that are reversed, old natural gas pipelines converted to oil. There's a lot of different efforts. There's still some places where oil is geographically disadvantaged, and Western Canada is like that. It's hard to move the oil from Western Canada, let's say, to the Pacific Ocean. And there's still a couple of places. But by and large, you know, a lot of the infrastructure has changed, and a lot of pipelines have been built in the last few years.
Okay, well, any last words? I mean, I realize that you don't invest a lot in the equity side, but a lot of folks out there have oil stocks. They pay pretty good dividends. From the sounds of things, when you first start out, you think that maybe we're nearing the bottom here, right?
I think we're nearing the bottom on crude oil, but I don't think we're going to see a ricochet off of that bottom. I think the term slog, which is really what we saw when we started that slow recovery from the 2008-2009 recession, is what we're going to look at. Then we're going to wake up one day, probably in another couple of years, and maybe have $70 oil or so. But in the meantime, there's some good things that are happening. First of all, people have much more money in their pockets to spend. And secondly, we're getting much more efficient. We're finding the places where you can bring that oil to market at cheaper numbers. We're getting much more competitive with the world. So, and it can change any day if the Saudis change their policy. If the Saudis wake up one day and they say, well, we'd like to see $75 a barrel oil, they can do it.
Okay. Tom, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.